We will begin as usual on the front row.
Look how you step.
We've got the terror dog here. Come here. Come here.
She'll come right to you.
Come here.
Yeah.
She's running.
Come here, get some in. What's going on? Come here.
He's going to show everybody this mean dog.
Here, here she is. You just don't grab that. Introduce him to Esther.
This is Esther. The mean guard dog. We needed another guard dog.
That's Don Michael and Gibbert Shevin's puppy.
This is Gibbert Shevin, the Don Mike's.
It was hatched yesterday.
No, he wasn't even looking. He never looked up to see.
That's how it is. She's a cutie. She's come a long way in, what, two weeks?
2 weeks.
That's a great act of...
It was like a month of
the born. Yeah, yeah. That's a great act of passing. To take care of one of God's creatures in such a way. Okay, so we'll go to the front row. Yoel said he's on the front row, but he's on the front row in the back of the theater. So we'll start with Dr. Oshoa sitting on the front row managing the...
Well, I like on page 35, down in the footnote on number 38. It talks about the play of Hebrew words, that it is my desire, rotzei, means idea of running towards something. That, along with the word immediately, is, it shows like it's the context of what all this is about. It's about immediately or heading in a direction and doing it quickly, like immediately. I thought that was pretty good.
Very good. Very good. You ever had to ask my mother?
I was wondering, in this thing here, was they talking about actual leprosy? Like,
yes.
Hansen's disease?
Not Hansen's disease. We'll talk about that in a minute. Not Hansen's disease. Biblical leprosy, which is it's basically almost a miraculous leprosy, and it's associated with speaking evil about somebody.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I'll talk about that in just a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, great question, because that's one question a lot of people have today. They don't understand whether it's biblical leprosy or Hansen's disease. And there's a considerable difference, and we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Get ready, Sheva.
My papers have little marks all over them. Because there's a lot there, the first thing that caught my eye was in on page 35.
Mm-hmm.
He says my will, and then in parentheses it says desire for you is to be clean. There's something there that just kind of the underlying difference between his will and his desire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that kind of caught me. But also on page 37 talks about compassion or reprimand, because here he's reprimanding him for the Lashon Hara.
Right.
And it makes you kind of do a self-speculation type thing.
Right, right. Very good. We'll talk about that in a minute too. You're right, Gibora.
Well, I think the whole concept of this being where Yeshua had consternation and reprimanded him, because he was not only, he was putting everybody in jeopardy, the whole congregation. He was not only disregarding Torah and oral Torah without a thought of anybody else. He was just thinking of himself.
Exactly.
And so it's very opposite of what a true righteous person would do.
Right.
You know, and so it says in here, there's not any sign of any visible sign where you know that he's actually repented.
Right.
And he won't do it again.
Right.
So that's where, you know, that's left up to, but the hermeneutics is how you do that.
Right.
So seeing how opposite it's been taught to what it actually is.
Right.
And then the fact that he doesn't actually touch the leper, but
exactly.
He points to him to go away.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just so opposite of what you've been taught in the church.
Yes.
And so I just really enjoyed this whole piece thing.
Very good. Very good. We're going to start on the front row this time with the men. That way we don't forget the auxiliary L. Your Honor?
I think, you know, there's several things that I, you know, that we've been taught. But probably on page 40, where, you know, it says, Philo further associates leprosy with impurity of soul and those mm-hmm. who flee from the authority of God.
Mm-hmm.
So what you just said, that it's more of a... it's not necessarily like a physical leprosy, but of the mouth, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. We'll try to expound on that as well. It's very good.
I think he's thinking the pass card.
He's thinking the pass card, huh?
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right. Anybody on the... cyberspace, want to interject anything before we move on? Yes.
Well, right.
That is correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. But on your well, does he have something to interject? Okay. You're going to use the pass card too, huh? All right. If you have a Bible, it might be good. Did you bring one, Mom?
No, I didn't. And I had it laid out too.
This one.
There's one
light
over my desk, too.
I think that's that mommy fire bird.
No, that's not.
Genesis 1.
No, we're actually going to start in the second Genesis in Mark. Right where we're reading from about the situation from the authorized version. This is the New King James Version. And I want to do just a little comparatory work with what's happening here.
What chapter, dear?
Chapter 1, okay. Starting verse 40. Now, first of all, when we start to read through this, you will undoubtedly look at Yeshua as if Yeshua is being so kind and compassionate, and he's being pictured as a miracle worker who works this miracle for the leper. Depending on your Bible, many times they'll have headings in the text that, of course, are not a part of, the manuscripts. Now, in some manuscripts, there are headings, and depending on which manuscript you're working from, the headings will vary. They're not chapter headings. They're just headings, sectional headings. One of the things very interesting is if you would look at Mark 1, and it starts to talk about the beginning of the Masorah, beginning of the oral traditions as Yeshua taught them, then you would think that a chapter heading would say something to that effect. Now, I have just a New King James Version that I've used for quite some time. I tried to wean myself off of the King James, not out of its structure or its accuracy. It's one of the most accurate. There's a lot of things to be said about that, but I'm not a King James only person, so don't take that for granted. But here in mine, it talks about Mark. You open up the book of Mark, and then it immediately begins to talk about Yochanan preparing the way. This is fine, but it doesn't really start out with the heading that it should start out with, because it starts to talk about Yeshua immediately. And then skips and starts to talk about Yochanan, okay? Which, very interestingly, Yochanan, the Gospel of John, does it very so-otically or very spiritually, and it speaks about Yeshua and the Torah, okay? So now under this particular heading where we're looking, it says Yeshua or Jesus cleanses the leper. He does no such thing. He's not cleansing this leper. He's acknowledging the fact that he doesn't have disease, the disease at present. And he's acknowledging the fact that he, and one of the things we have missed from this particular section is that that Yeshua is conducting himself as a Kohen, as a priest. But he's conducting himself as a priest of the firstborn. But Yeshua still, nevertheless, tells him that he has to go and visit the priest and then have himself declared clean, etc. Now, in verse 40, I'll read here so you can begin to see. It says, and a leper came to him, imploring him, kneeling down to him, and saying to him, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Now, here I'll read mine so you can see the difference, because it's important. If you read this from the context that it has in, let's say, the Authorized Version, it is impossible to come away with a different point of view than what is here. You will think that Yeshua is nothing but a miracle worker, etc. Which, back to the headings for a second, it is interesting because the way that the headings were set up in certain of the manuscripts, Alexandrinus and the Washingtonius are set up, and the way that they're set up is that they only put a heading where there is a miracle in that particular paragraph. Okay, so you understand, of course, there's no chapter and verse in antiquity, but there were paragraphs. Now, hunting the paragraphs and the manuscripts, I can hand you a couple of manuscripts or photos of manuscripts and say, here, find the paragraph breaks for me, and you pull your hair out, because it's extremely difficult. And the different versions, manuscripts and codexes, they all have varying places where they break. But Alexandrinus and the Washingtonius are very faithful to make breaks in the paragraph texts, but they break the paragraph where they want to break the paragraph, and they only break the paragraph where a miracle is in place. Now, what they're trying to project is Yeshua as a miracle worker. And of course, then this carries all of its baggage. But that was their interest in doing what they did. And so you might say that that is their agenda. The agenda here is to try to find out what's really the truth. Okay, so the leper comes to him. Let's read it in page 35 as we've translated. It said, a leper came to him, to Yeshua, begging him on his knees, Master, if you so desire. Now, the reason we use the word desire is because desire in Hebrew is the word ratzon. Ratzon, the desire, is you have two sides of the tree, the tree of life, the tree of light. One side is the side of chesed, mercy. And the other side is the side of deen. We'll get more into that in a minute, of justice. So, desire is the desire to give something. And then, of course, on the opposite side, you would have a desire to receive. Okay? Don't say take. Say receive. Because Kabbalah, when we talk about the oral Torah, and we talk the word Kabbalah, in its simplistic term, Kabbalah means to receive. And so we say receive. Now, I did this with it on your well some time ago, and I had an apple, and I was going to give to him. So Adonia Well reaches out, and I think we had it orchestrated, but he reaches out to take the apple, and I wouldn't let him take it. So then the illustration was to put out the hands like this, and then I put the apple in his hands. That means he received it, okay? So there's a difference between taking something and receiving something. And in the process of education, spiritual education, it is reception. You receive. So there's a desire to give and there's a desire to receive. But Yeshua, he wanted to give this leper something, but Yeshua will not do something contrary to halacha. Okay, so, or halacha means the interpretation of the commandments, how the commandments must be kept. Okay? You know that there's, if you read through this portion of the Nazarene Codicil and you read through the commentary, you know there are commandments concerning the leper in his interaction with people. And so, clearly, if you were to read Leviticus 13 and 14, when you read it, if you read those verses and then you come back to read this piece of the Nazarene Codicil and you read it from your, quote, King James or your authorized version, what's going to happen is you're going to say, well, Yeshua, he had no appreciation, respect, or otherwise for the commandments because he let this guy come in the middle of the congregation with this sirach, this leprosy, and it was okay. But this is not the way that it truly reads in the text. And let me say this. If a Jewish person, knowing the Torah, came to this portion of the Nazarene Codicil and started to read, what do you think that he would be deriving from this pericope concerning Yeshua and his Talmudim? Yeah, they weren't Torah observant. They weren't following Torah. They said, yeah, let him come on in. It's okay. But we have to be very careful about that. Okay? And ritual purity, if you'll remember in the case, it'll be in Mark chapter 5, where the woman with the issue of blood comes, and she reaches out and she touches the tzitzit, the fringes of his garment. There's a lot to be said about that, but she comes and she touches that. He said in, I think it's the King James or otherwise, it said, virtue went out of him. In other words, it says he realized immediately that he was ritually unclean. Doesn't mean he was in sin. Doesn't mean that, you know, he was incapable of, you know, doing his role, but what it meant is that at evening, he would have to go and he would have to ritually immerse and have himself immersed, and he would immerse himself, and then he would be ritually clean again. So it's not a problem. Here in this particular case is a absolute violation of protocol because the leper is not supposed to come to inside of the congregation. Yeshua moved with indignation. Now, mostly it's read with compassion, but it's not compassion in this particular case. It can say compassion, but it intimates, even through study of the vocabulary, it intimates that he's not compassionate, that he's indignant. And he stretches out his hand to him. He doesn't stretch his hand out to touch him. He stretches his hand out to say, stop right where you're at, because you can't come any further. You come into this particular community. It will not be just me that becomes ritually unclean. It'll be this whole community that might have the chance of contriving this particular disease, and look at what will happen then to the community. Now, two things. Number one, as my mother, Gabriel Hadassah, asked, is leprosy cure Hansen's disease? And the answer to that question is no. Now, if you understand Hansen's disease is the reason that the skin falls off of the person who has Hansen's disease is because he has no sensation or ability to sense pain in his hand. So, for example, if you were to stick a key in the door, and let's say you or I, not having Hansen's disease, stick a key in the door and we turn it, we'll turn it to a point and then we'll stop. The reason that we stop is because we feel pain. And so the pain sensor, let's say in this case in the pain sensor in the hand tells you stop, because if you go any farther, that you're going to rip or tear the skin, et cetera, and then this starts a process of this Hansen's disease. So there's no sensation in members of the body. This is not the case with biblical leprosy. Biblical leprosy is the result of Lashon Hara, speaking evil about somebody. And it was basically considered to be a miraculous disease. So in other words, you know, it was a little bit more of the situation where if you said something contrary or evil about somebody, there was an immediate reaction to that, and you had that in your flesh, and you bore that pain. Now, let me just point this out. With the Hansen's disease, there are the pain receptors have been deadened. And so when we try to turn the key, let's say as we use the illustration, there's not a problem with being able to turn the key. You can turn the key.
You just
can't feel that point at where to stop. But if you took a pair of pliers and did the same thing, you wouldn't do it because you've got a medium there that there's no pain involved. Okay? So this is why if you said to the leper, say, can you unlock this? They would say, yeah. And they would turn it, and they would go beyond the point that you or I would turn it. And then, you know, it might be a situation, oh, you weakling or whatever, okay? But the truth of the situation with them is that they could not do it, or we could not do it because of the sensation of pain, okay? So he stretched out his hand to send him away to the Kohanim, which was what he was supposed to do. Now, the Kohanim, the priests, were the special agents, and this is where their job was. Now, this is very much, it's very interesting, because we say that in the present world, it would seem like that the people that should be the sickest people in the world are the people who work in the hospitals. Or the jobs that you all have, where you're exposed to all these sniffles and colds and flus and all that all year round. But what happens?
Build up your immune system.
You build up your immune system toward that, to the point of, you know, you can walk in. And if I go into the school system and walk around there for a day or two, pretty soon I'll be sick and et cetera. You all have built a certain immunity to it. Now, this is the way with the Kohen. The Kohen could go into that community, and whether you call it what, it is a protection that is granted by God on the Kohanim. So he said to him, my will desire for you is that you be clean. Now, understand something. One of the titles of Messiah is the leper scholar. The reason that he is called the leper scholar has nothing to do with him having leprosy. But there is some information in the oral Torah that says that Messiah sits in the community of lepers. And what he does is he unwraps the bandages of the leper and then he wraps them back again. But he only does, for example, one piece or one leper at a time. And that is because the idea is saying that he doesn't know when he'll be called, and so he's not going to leave the job of finishing this particular wrapping or taking care of this particular leper before he heeds the call to come as the herald of the Messianic kingdom, if you will. Everybody with me? So he said, my desire is for you to be clean. And immediately the leprosy went from him and he was clean. In essence, he was already clean, and there's an announcement that he would be clean. And also that, you know, if he comes into contact with a Torah scholar, this is one of the things that I say this very carefully. James said, call for the elders. So in other words, he's called for the Torah scholars and have them pray for the people. Why?
Because they're full of the Word of God.
Okay.
They know how to dose, as it was, or they know how to prescribe certain spirits, certain passages for whatever's going wrong.
So to speak, you understand what she's saying? So in other words, they can look spiritually at the person and identify the spiritual cause behind the difficulty and then prescribe the answer to that, etc. This was very common in the Torah scholar that we call the Rambam.
Could that be described also as forgiveness, or, you know, to be cleaned, or to be cleaned is like something physical, whereas this is more of a spiritual type of cleansing?
He's not giving this person forgiveness. Yeshua cannot
forgive.
He can't grant forgiveness. That's God's job. What Yeshua can do is say, you know, I can announce to you that God has forgiven you, and he can say that as a representative of God. It's very much the same way as the elders could, okay, in our situation about how them, etc. So here it would be an announcing that that could be the case, and this is basically what he's telling him to go to the priest for. The priest will what? Not forgive him. He will announce his cleanliness, that he's clean. Right, exactly. All right? So after harshly reprimanding him for gossip or lashon hara, evil speaking the evil tongue, he sent him away, immediately saying, see, never speak lashon hara again against anyone. Now go and show yourself to the Kohen and offer for cleansing what Moshe in the Oral Torah and the Oral Torah has commanded as a witness or of Teshuvah, or the fact that you have repented for them. And the Kohanim and Yeshua went out and publicized the chief principles of the Masorah, so that much that Yeshua could not so much that only could openly appear in the city, but he was constrained by staying in remote places, where he devoted time to prayers, and you could go on with that, not just prayers, but also with Torah study and proclamation of the Torah study, or the Torah, the Oral Torah, okay? One thing that we have to learn is the world of balance. In other words, we have to find a happy medium between chesed, mercy, God's mercy, and deen, God's justice. Especially as all of us, as some form of an agent of God. So whenever you're communicating with people, you are a particular agent. If you're speaking something about the Torah, etc., then what you're doing is you're conducting yourself as an agent at that particular time. What we must do is we must take great caution to make sure that our words are well balanced and that we're not leaning to one side or leaning to the other in this communication with these people. You will note later that Yeshua sends out his Talmudim, his disciples, and how does he send them out?
Two by two.
Two by two. Why two by two? Why not three of them together? So that they can balance one another out. So, you know, here's how comments affect. Okay. Which side of the tree, or let's say, would you put Hakam's effect? Would he be on the side of Dean, or would he be on the side of Hesed?
Dean.
I would say Dean. But if we turn the person around, then it would be Hesed, right?
Right.
Which is very interesting because
it depends on who else he's with.
That's exactly right. It's interesting because you look at the pictures, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, but you look at pictures of the tree of life, and when you look at it, on one side, on the right-hand side is Dean, and on the left-hand side is Hesed, and then if you turn around, which is the picture of the Adam Kadmon, that's the way it turns out. Okay, now let me just say this, and we'll try to make a bit of a transition here. When you come to the Nazarene Codicil, and you begin to read the text, you should follow the hermeneutic, which is a method of interpretation, which says that we start first with a Torah. Okay? And so in this case, we have Sarat. Okay? Leprosy, etc. So, you come to this verse, 1 and 40, and you read the word, and a leper came. What should you do at that point, right there?
Think about what it means for a leper to come from what it says in Torah.
Okay? So you know there's going to be a ruling, some halacha, about how the leper has to interact with the community. So what you should do is just leave this as it is for the moment, and then go back into the Torah and find those informations about the Torah and what the Torah says about it, and then come here to this passage in the Nazarene Codicil. After you do that, you go into the Torah, and you find what the Torah says, then you come back to this particular text, and you could say, there's a problem here. They don't understand this because this was the situation. Then, as I said a few minutes ago, you have to come to the conclusion, number one, that Yeshua didn't care about the Torah or the commandments or any of that, and neither did he care about all these other things. And if you do that, you throw away his whole persona and his true identity, which has been done for nearly 2,000 years. And I might have my hand slapped for saying certain things, but that makes him into a false Messiah, not the true Messiah. Because Messiah, in Deuteronomy, as Moshe said, "You, one of your brethren from among you will rise up, and he will be like me." So if a brother among the community rises up and he's like Moshe, what does that mean? Moshe did it, exactly. Moshe promoted the Torah. So Messiah, if Messiah comes and he's trying to negate the Torah, he's not Messiah. Now this is the problem that the Jewish people have with the precept of who Jesus is. They can't comprehend or reconcile it because everything that they see it the way that it's been interpreted for the last 2,000 years. And no wonder they won't have anything to do with the Jewish or the Christian people, if you will. They're determined that they are worshiping the wrong person, etc., etc. Okay? So your hermeneutic has to always start with the Torah. We use the Torah in this particular case to lay down the foundation for what we would look right here. So now, everybody has either a Strong's Concordance or an eSword, or they have something that they could look. I mean, even some of the Bibles are sufficient Bibles that when you look into the Bible, it has a little index or whatever in the back, and you can go and then you can look and you can find leprosy where it's mentioned in the Torah, etc. But by all means, you should make this a habit. Do not read the Nazarene Codicil, any particular subject, without taking into consideration what it's saying in the Torah and how it's relating to the Torah. Now let me say this. The Torah is always correct. That's the first rule you must accept when you come to read the Nazarene Codicil. If it appears in any way to contradict the rulings or the laws that are laid down, in this case, Sarat, leprosy, biblical leprosy, and if it seems to contradict that, what should you do?
Check your understanding, first of all.
Absolutely.
Because your understanding may not be clear as to what the Torah says. So you have to go clarify what the Torah says. It may be more than one place. You may not be able to just look in one place.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you need to do a little bit of research, as it were, to try to find out what it says. But if after your bit of research you're still confused, you have to realize and accept that you don't know the answer. Instead of playing this game and saying, well, guess what? This is this or this is this. No, it's okay to not have the answer. His Eminence and many, many rabbis, and this one first, will tell you that no one has all the answers. Many people have opinions, but I say we all have belly buttons, too. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't get down there and start sniffing one if I were you. Exactly. Everybody with me so far? Mm-hmm. So, it is very important for us to come to the place that we understand how to follow these rules of interpretation and understand that there are things that we can learn beyond what we had thought we knew, or even when things are good or that we've learned, to go beyond them and learn deeper things. Now, you can look at the text. Now, I could do this. I could just put a Greek translation of the text here and then tell you, you want to read it? Learn to read Greek. And then just leave it like that. But that's a difficulty for many of us. We've spent many years with our English tongue and, you know, we're not capable at this juncture, you know, if we went ahead and pounded our head against the wall and studied Greek until we turned blue in the face, we might get somewhere with it. Excuse me. But the problem is, I could say, well, just go read it in Greek. You'll see it. But the situation is that we need something that we can and hold on to in English that's explanatory enough that we can go and find out what the text is really saying. Everybody with me so far? So your first principle of trying to understand the Nazarene Codicil is to understand the Torah first. I said this, I've repeated it. Someone came to me several years ago and they said, where are the passages that correlate in the Nazarene Codicil that correlate with the Torah? So don't worry about it. Go study the Torah. Was that the right answer?
Absolutely.
Sure.
You don't know
because, exactly. If we do not understand the Torah, we will not understand the Nazarene Codicil. Now I want to take it a little bit further and tell you that we need to go another step, and the other step is toward understanding the oral Torah. Okay? When it says the gospel, it is implying that Yeshua let's do this quickly. Verse 1 of Mark. And it's saying, Yeshua in the beginning, not the beginning, but Yeshua is the most important part, chief part of the Masorah. As Ben Elohim. Now, when we say Ben Elohim, the son of Elohim, we are saying in one sense that he is son of the judge. Or you could say, is he the son of God? Yeah, you can say he's the son of God. Not the way that Christianity defines the son of God, but definitely as the Jewish people define the son of God. And all you have to do is get into Exodus that says, Israel is my firstborn son. So all of Israel is the son of God. But it was then reserved specially for the kings. Okay, the kings were called the sons of God. But the kings, if we say this about Yeshua, say that he's the son of God, and we use that vernacular, then what we're saying is that he's the king, Messiah. But there's another way we can go ahead and interpret and unfold this Ben Elohim, this son of God, is that he, Elohim, is in the plural. Okay? So we could say it like this. If it's in the plural, then it would be the son, he would be the son of
judges.
The judges, plural. Or I say it like this, I paraphrase it, use my own little way to explain it, and say that he is the sum of all of the judges. So all the Sanhedrins that existed prior to Yeshua, Yeshua has accepted all of that information and knowledge, and now he's a rabbi, and he has all of that information in him. And what can he do? He can judge according to the judgment of all the judges who've been before him. You see what I'm saying? So, he comes as the sum of all the sages who walked before him. Because he sat in yeshiva, and sitting in yeshiva, he sits and he learns the Torah. He learns it all at the hands of his teacher. Everybody with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the leper came, begging him on his knees, and he said, if you desire, you have the power to make me clean. You know, Yeshua, being moved with indignation, stretched out his hand toward him, and he sent him away to the Kohen, which you'll read that down below, understanding that we put it here in brackets so that you would understand that this was intimated by the text. However, the intimation comes from the idea, reading down below, where it said, go and show yourself to the Kohen. Okay, so we know where he sent him to. He was being sent to the Kohen. Now, and immediately the leprosy went from him, and he was clean. And after harshly reprimanding him for gossip, lashon hara, he, Yeshua, sent him away. Now, there is something that happens here that we must be conscientious of, and that is the skin was affected in some way and it was decaying. Okay? So it was falling off of him. Okay? So, the skin is falling off of him. Now, we know that it's a result of his Lashon Hara. We've already talked about that. Very interesting. One of the ways the rabbis came to determine how that it was associated with Lashon Hara is that they said that the birds, which are a part of the sacrifice that the leper has to make, he has to sacrifice these little birds. And the little birds are birds that chatter, just never stop. So you get the idea? So this person, what's he doing? He's just chattering, stopping. He doesn't stop talking about things. He's just always talking to the point of saying things that are not true. Okay? Now, I'm going to do something. I'm going to connect something. But I'm going to make this connection. Hopefully, everyone. You're at Sheba. Can you make sure Mom has one? You probably have one of those in your thing, don't you? You guys have a copy of the thing?
I do.
You can just use this one for the time being. Do you need one, Sheba, or do you have one?
I have one.
Okay. Now, I'm going to connect some dots, but for some of us, this is going to be a little bit of a leap. Okay, understanding how I get from one place to the other, and hopefully you'll bear with me to understand my thinking and understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. Okay, I am now looking, and those of you on the internet, just if you go to the Torah Focus page, there'll be a place there where you can see it says 10 men. You can download this document just that I have in my hands. Okay? Now, keep in mind what I'm talking about is leprosy and the deadness of the flesh, and I will try to bring all this together. Now, when I'll say this basically as an introduction, Chacham Shaul talks about the fivefold ministry. If you start just, if you look at the middle line, about the middle of the page, it'll say seven pakidim, who are servants of the bench. And then you look immediately below that on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see Gedolah, which is chesed, and then it will talk about greatness and mercy. Everybody see that? Then Gevura, we have a Gevura in our midst, Gevura, strength and might. And then we go through these seven people, and this is the fivefold ministry. Because the Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod, those are all three pastoral roles. Okay? And then we have the teacher, Tiferet being the prophet, and then you have Chesed and Gevura as wisdom and knowledge, etc., or the way that they fall out in the fivefold ministry in Ephesians. Okay? And we did this with counting of the Yomer so that you can see it. Now you will see there the line, if you go back to where it says the seven Pakidim and the servants of the bench. Okay, now what we're talking about here is something that is called the tree of life. This whole diagram is called the tree of life. You will never come to the place of fully understanding the revelation, the work of John, the Gospels, if you will, of John, the letters of John, excuse me. You will not understand them until you understand this material. Because each one of these persons forms a literal person, but they also have many They have many
I don't need it.
That's okay, just hold on. You don't need it. You can correct me where I'm wrong. Now, they're looking at the diagram at the top. Let's just call it the crowd. Okay? And here we'll say the top keter is the crown, and specifically the crown of Messiah. This one, as Dr. Ochoa is saying, is usually hidden or concealed in, for the most part, it is concealed to us.
You get enhancing allegory instead of
just not allegory, but symbols. Okay. Then on the right-hand side, you'll see Chokhmah over here, which is wisdom. And then we'll have Bina, which is understanding. Now, if we had to talk about the way that power would move in these circles, we would say power comes from Messiah to the Hakam, and then from the Hakam it goes to the Bina, and then from there we'll come and we'll draw a line through, and it will come down here to Chesed. And over here to Gevura. And so you will see this, and then, of course, this energy will flow across here, and then it will go down to the ones that are lower down below. Everybody with me? Okay. This is how this is like the flow of authority. Messiah is the head. Okay? Then it comes to the position, Chokhmah, the man of wisdom, a sage, not a pastor. The pastors actually, again, are the ones that are below, way down here below. They're the ones that are taking care of the people. Okay, what if somebody doesn't have food? It's a pastoral job. How did she get out, or did you let her out?
I let her out, but I let her out to go back.
Okay, so Chokhmah is the sage. And these men, Chokhmah and Bina, in this particular case, are men who sit on the bench. Sitting on the bench means they're judges. Okay? There were judges in the Nazarene Codice. So you hear Yeshua's walking through a place, and they come and they say, "Hey, wait. So there's a man who is the ruler of the synagogue. His daughter is ill." Okay, so that particular person is not specifically the Hakam in this particular case, but it shows you, what it shows you is that there is a hierarchical structure, to authority in the Nazarene Codice of the New Testament. Everybody with me? Everybody with me?
Yes.
Everybody understands so far? So now we could just take this and go on down to the ones that are below, but this is sufficient here because now we have here a place where there, let's make this a line, and it goes across here and across here, and it creates a space, if you will, here in this particular location. Everybody with me? Now, look at this chart for a second, and you will see that on the right-hand side, it will say heavenlies or heavenly places close to the top. Okay? These offices represent spiritual wisdom, spiritual maturity, etc. Okay? So people who sit in this place are men who are sufficient to judge. Because the judge, when he judges, he doesn't stick his hand out and say, "Well, how much money do you want for me to bend the rules?" Okay? The judges have to be, actually, judges are supposed to be men that are retired for the most part. Why? And they've got their own sustenance, so we can't bribe them. And I say, "Your money doesn't mean anything to me." And truthfully, this is the way it should be for the judges, because the judges say, wait, I don't care about, you know, this partiality business. I don't care about money. The judgment has to be true. Okay? Everybody with me? So these judges stand at this place right here. Now, one thing that you have on this particular document that I've not drawn into this, what is it?
Da'at.
Now, there is Da'at, which is right here in this particular middle section. this section here, according to your diagram, what it does is it says this is the heavenlies, etc. And then here, down here, is the earth or earthly places. Everybody with me? So now what we're looking for is for spiritual energy to come from the crown of Messiah to the Hakam, to this Hakam, and then it flows through the Ot to Chesed. Okay? So the Chat, excuse me, the Ot is here, as it were, a bridge between the two worlds. Everybody see that? Okay, now look at your chart for a second, and let's do it in reverse. At the very bottom is the Shekinah, or the kingdom, Malchut, which means kingdom. Kingdom, when a kingdom is being ruled, it has to have rules. Otherwise, it wouldn't be ruled. And you have to have a ruler. Why do they call it a ruler?
It's measurements.
What is it measuring?
Distance, mostly.
Said there was a Gentile that came to Shammai. Said, teach me the Torah while I stand on one foot. Said he chased him away with a builder's level. He didn't chase him away with a level trying to whack him on the head. In other words, what he tried to do was tell him all of these things and be ultra strict with him. A person can't start out that way. You can't tell me there are 613 rules. I want you tomorrow, by tomorrow morning, I want you to have them all memorized and then come back and I'll talk about this.
Might get 13.
Yeah, there you go. Can we use a cheat sheet? All right. So at the bottom is Malchut, the kingdom, Yesod. And what it would do is the energy would flow, if you will. The energy, if it were coming down, just follow this line, and you'll get over here to Chesed, which is the deep blue on the right-hand side. It will go across the Gibor, which we show here. And then it would come diagonally right down through Tiferet. Everybody see that? And then the green, Netzach, and then Hod, then to Yesod, and then it would go straight down the Malchut. Now let's follow it in reverse. It goes from the Shekhinah, or Malchut, to Yesod, to Hod, the orange, to Netzach, to Tiferet, to Gevura, cross back over to Chesed, diagonal back up all the way through Da'at, and go to Bina, across to Chochmah, and then the crown on top, the energy or the spirituality from the crown. Now, look it. Suppose you're trying to draw spiritual information from the Torah, from your study, etc. Mentally, you should almost, this is not an exercise for you to do, but what will happen if we could see the process of understanding or realize the process of achieving this, truly what happens is you meet in the middle. So the middle would just about be one of two places. It'd be either Da'at or it'd be Tiferet. Everybody see that? It's about the middle. So what you come to the middle. Why do I say to the middle? Because when we initiate, Hashem is going to do the same, right? So the energy is going to come. It's very interesting if you ever do see lightning, the way that lightning truly works. And I saw this illustration one time, and I thought it was so fascinating. In the dark, they had the picture of a, or not a picture, but they were had the camera on a tree. And then as you watched in extreme slow motion, all of a sudden something came up out of the tree and began to go upwards into the sky. And then the out of the sky, the lightning bolt came down and connected with this thing that the tree was reaching up into the atmosphere to get. And it was that lightning, that power that came down. So I say that because what we have to do is we have to reach up. If you want spirituality in your life, you have to do what? You have to reach for it. God's not just going to pour a bucket out of them and say, I thought you could use that. It doesn't work that way. Okay? Now, if we are trying to spiritually progress to a level of maturity, let's say we've reached chesed. We've reached the level, spiritual level of chesed. And we want to go up to, let's say, bina. What we have to do is first come in contact with da'at. Now, da'at means to know. Okay? Everybody knows that Adam knew Eve and she couldn't see him. That means he knew her pretty well. I say she was the most beautiful woman on the planet. She was the only one, right? And she got the most handsome man in the whole world, didn't she? Okay. Now, it's interesting, if we will look at this office of Dot, we said it means to know. That means to have an intimate connection. So the connection that we want is a connection that moves from this level all the way up to Bina and Chokhmah. So what we're trying to achieve is reach a spirituality, a point of spirituality, ultimately to be connected with Messiah, etc. Now, I'm not saying we're not connected with Messiah, so don't say that. What I'm trying to say is he tells us in Ephesians basically to imitate Messiah. So that's the goal. Our goal is to imitate Messiah. How are you going to imitate Messiah if you don't know the Torah? Yochanan says, in the beginning was
the Torah.
The Word. It was a person, by the way. Okay? It's this person. Okay? Well, I got to wrap up real quick. And this is only going to frustrate you. Hopefully. This place here, and study and research of this information, is called, the blue lines we have here is called the abyss. Okay? So this is a great chasm, a great space right here that we have to cross. Now, we have to cross here, and we have to cross, in essence, like this to Bina. But the bridge that you have to take across this area here, this abyss, is Da'at. Da'at then becomes the bridge to get us across from Chesed to all the way to Messiah. All right? Now, Dr. Lesheva said earlier that we don't see this. This is basically concealed. From us. We don't see the crown of Messiah. You don't see the crown of Messiah in Chokhmah or in Bina because you're down here below this level. Okay? But as you begin to come to Da'at, then you can begin to see this because Da'at receives spiritual intuition, power, force from three directions. Number one, here you see we have it connected right here with Bina. Everybody see that? And then we see over here, this flows over here, but Chokhmah also has a direct connection to Da'at. And Da'at is directly connected or mirrors this position right here. Everybody with me? So you see three layers trying to connect to the crown on the side. If you talk about Da'at, you don't talk about the crown. If you talk about the crown, we make Da'at invisible. Okay? Notice here that the two of them on the document are both white. Now, we said this is the abyss. What I'm going to try to do, I'm not trying to be deeply Sa'otic. This is not deeply Sa'otic. Not yet. Because all we're saying, Chokhmah is a hakam, okay? He's a judge. This guy's a judge. Here is the third person on the panel of judges. Okay? Everybody with me? So these three people are the judges. You have to have a minimum of three. You can't have two. Why?
You have to be able to break the tie.
Somebody has to break the tie.
It has to be an odd number.
Has to be an odd number. Okay? This is the way judges and judgment work in Judaism. Now, I said this is the abyss. The way you have to understand this is that this is an abyss, but Da'at is a bridge. Okay? So if you're going to get across this great chasm right here, you have to cross on the bridge of Da'at to get to the other side or to reach above.
It's like going across the bridge, the old bridge over the Kidron Valley.
Yeah, yeah. Or any bridge. Across a river. Okay? Now, what's in the abyss? Book of Revelation 9:11. There is a king over them, an angel of the bottomless pit, whose name is Abaddon, but in Greek his name is Apollyon. This means that he's a destroyer, etc. It's interesting because this angel has another name in Hebrew, and his name is Mavdil. Listen to the word, Mavdil. What does it sound like?
Mavdil, the prophet.
Say what? I don't got rid of it. Habdallah. Absolutely. Habdallah. Okay? Habdallah is a separation between the mundane and the spiritual. So that's what this angel is. He is the separation between the upper world and the lower world. Okay? And that's what this chasm does. It separates the lower and the upper and the lower worlds, this great chasm right here. Now, the way I'm going to bring this about and talk about this is that in the chasm, in this great abyss, the great abyss, many of the things that are placed in the abyss are things that are trash. Okay? Because it's considered to be a bottomless pit. Okay, so what do we put in the wastebasket? Trash. Okay, this is the trash can right here. This abyss is the trash can. So now I'm going to connect this, and I'm basically going to leave it like this, and we'll have to try to discuss this in the coming weeks as we work it out a little bit further. But here is the abyss. Here's the abyss called that is mentioned in Revelation. Now let's see. We need to go to Revelation.
Is it the same abyss that it talks about when he looked up and said, "Let Lazarus put his finger in cool water"? And
he would have been on the abyss, like being on the other side, where he said, "I can't come over there."
Right.
The reason he can't come over there is because of the chasm, and not only that, that the things that have been thrown into the chasm don't come back out. Now, let's take this, if you will, please accept the analogy. You have a room in your house where private things are conducted, and you have to go to this room occasionally. And when you leave the room, you evacuate all the waste of the body. Surely, we don't want to know where the pipe goes so we can go get any of that back. You see my point? Exactly. So here what we're talking about is evacuating from ourselves spiritually things that need to be thrown in the trash can. And once we've evacuated those things to the waste bin, the abyss, then we have the spiritual energy and knowledge and knowledge of the ought to cross over into the spiritual dimension and become more spiritual. Now, I'm going to stop here, but before I stop, I'm going to ask the question, how on earth does this have anything to do with reading about the story of the leper?
The leper was basically taken out of the community, and he had a choice. He either passed, go through the chasm and become healed with experientially doing what he's supposed to in the forest,
right,
or he could be lost in that bottomless pit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you see what I'm saying? So he stands on the precipice of the abyss, and he's got one of two choices. He's going to say, I kind of like the ability to gossip about my neighbor. If he says this, then he takes the plunge into the bottomless pit. If he repents and he says, wait, I don't want to go there. He will repent, and his repentance will bring him to the place. He goes to the Kohen. The Kohen's job is just not like, you know, I'm going to announce and make you clean. This whole process has been instructional. It's to teach him how not to speak Lashon Hara. This is what Yeshua is saying too, right? No. You don't come into the community with Lashon Hara. If you come into the community with Lashon Hara, pretty soon everybody's chirping like those little birds. Okay? And it's a disease that spreads through the community. Yeshua stopped him because Yeshua said, wait. This is not coming into my community. You see what I'm saying? He's standing saying, Nazareans, if we can use that phrase, Nazareans, those of us who follow Yeshua as our master and our guide, Torah scholar, etc. So he comes and he if he follows the right path, he can go from Da'at across the chasm and enter into the spiritual or the heavenly domain. Otherwise, he's standing here. Now let me draw one analogy as we close. Let me give you one other piece of... There is a monster or a demon S-H-A-I-T-A-N S-H-A-I-T-A-N. Did I spell it right? Yeah. Now, listen, perk your ears up. If you knew English, I'm not talking about American, I'm talking about English, and the way they speak there, if they were to call somebody a shite, it's associated with this. Please pay attention, because I'm going to say this very carefully. And you have to listen so that you understand what it's referring to. There's a demon by this name. This is also a name associated with the devil. Look it up in Google. Rabbi Google has the answer on this one. Shit. What did it sound like? Stuff that we evacuate in the bathroom. There's a spirit that is in this place. That's what it's called. Remember they said that the devil Beelzebub was the lord of the flies? Now let's go to, as we close, Revelation 20:13. I guess I better get to 20:13. Oh, in verse 12, and I saw the dead, the small, the great, standing before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. This book, this tree of life, we're talking about the tree of life, there's a book of life. Or it could even here, notice how, if you will, the word book is italicized. See that? So,
it wasn't there.
It could be the tree of life, could be easily the tree of life, the same as it could be the book of life, right? It said, and the dead were judged according to their deeds or to their works by the things which were written in the books books, plural, one of three books, okay? One is the book of the holy righteous, one of the book of the holy wicked, and the other is the intermediate, those who are somewhere in between. Said, and the sea gave up the dead and who were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead who were in them, and they were judged according to his works, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire, and this is the second death. And anyone who is written in the book of life was cast into the lake that burns with fire. Question. You hush. Where is this lake of fire? Is it some spiritual thing it's speaking about? Or is it a real place?
It is, perhaps.
Okay, you said the abyss. You're absolutely correct, but now I have to ask you, where is the abyss? Is there such a place on the planet that all of this comparative illustration works from?
Everything that's spiritual is connected to the physical.
Physical. There has to be.
The Dead Sea.
The Dead Sea.
Lake Asphaltus.
Lake, it's called in Josephus Lake Asphaltus. Asphalt, because the oil is burning on the top of the lake. And there they harvested petroleum products in biblical times.
Like all the lotions that Gibberet El Sheva brought us from the Dead Sea products, they all came from there with the oils.
So now, death and hell are cast into this abyss. Where did they get the picture of the abyss? It's the lowest place on the planet. January the 5th, 20 years ago, I got on board of an airplane and I went to Israel. We spent 10 days in Israel. And one day I called Dr. Elisheva and I said, I feel really down today, sweetheart. As low as I think I've ever been. Who's at the Dead Sea? You've been there. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it lower than you've ever been before?
I guess so.
But it's a neat thing, you know, the water, you can float on the water, right? You don't even have to swim. You just get in there and crawl back, read the newspaper. Well, I wanted to take everybody fishing, but nobody would bring their pole.
If you've got a sore on your body, don't you know
it? Don't know about it. Okay, so they've drawn this from this analogy, they've drawn this abyss from having this connection to the Dead Sea. The leper needed what? His dead skin is falling off of him, right? So it shows him like a spiritual situation of God allowing the skin to fall off so that the person, the new skin, would come up underneath it, and this person would have in a certain measure a rejuvenation of himself if he did teshuva in the appropriate repentance in the appropriate way. If he did not do teshuva in the appropriate way, listen, nobody stands at the precipice of the abyss with someone behind him to push him in. It doesn't work that way. The people that go there, it is their choice.
It says in the Torah that there has to be sacrifices for the leper, I think, once on the third day and once on the seventh day.
Yeah.
And if they make one and not the other, they're still unclean. So, I mean, it has to be, it's a very complicated thing that they have to go through with before the priest can judge them as unclean.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, let me say this, and I will close with this. 100%. We can fall into the trap of not finding a balance between chesed and gevura. And if you have one without the balance of the other, that brings you to the place where your imbalance has produced in itself something that needs to be put in the abyss. Are you with me? if we're so ding, 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 judge, and we have no chesed, no mercy, then guess what? There's part of us that has to go into the abyss. Pieces of us that we need to rid ourselves of, that we can throw in the trash can and say, now, you know, I am light enough, as it were, spiritually speaking, to cross this chasm. Okay? Now, these things can become deeply so'otic, but I didn't give you a so'otic message. I gave you a practical application of understanding these stations with inside of the congregation, etc. So this is a way that it's practical for us to understand. Stop and think, and we'll try to speak about this a little bit further, but stop and think about the things in your life that you need to evacuate to that place. And I don't have better language to say it than that without being much more vulgar. You can use an extremely vulgar phrase that people are not aware of the depth of it, its vulgarity. You want me to say it? Anybody ever told you to get lost? It's as vulgar as it gets. How could you possibly say something to somebody? Of course, we can say this is in jest or otherwise. That's one thing. And we say it now with some jest, etc. But how could you possibly wish this on a person? I knew a person that said this intentionally to another person.
Sometimes our actions do that too.
Yeah.
We tell someone to get lost just by ignoring them,
avoiding
them, and, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our part to connect with them.
Hopefully you've seen the lesson and made the connection. It's not some obscurity to you, the point that we made. The connection. Believe me, we didn't even get to the rim of the abyss with regards to things we can say about it. So I hope that in some way inspired you and helped you. Any questions or comments before we go further? Gives everybody something to chew on for a day or two, huh? I intend not to be abrasive, but sometimes these things can be a little bit abrasive. But I would much rather be rebuked at the hand of the master so that I know, chastised by the hand of the master, however you like to say it. Now. Do it now. Not later. Do it now. And the reason I say that is because what I want to achieve in myself personally is true spirituality. I am in no way making any type of pretense to be Mr. Anything. So please don't think that I am trying to propagate that in any way. As most of you know, this is supposed to be my office. I say that with no great pride, saying, look at what I am, but this is what I am trying to become. This is a goal in life, to become the station that you've given. And Hashem does that quite frequently. He gives you a station above your capacity so you will
rise.
Absolutely. So I'm telling you that there is a way to cross the abyss, and that is first to evacuate those things in your life that are hindering you from crossing that spiritual chasm through your da'at. Da'at should be intimate love for Hashem, right? You have an intimate love with God, for God. And if we do that, then what we want to do is come to the place that we say, what is keeping me from becoming closer to God than what I already am? And we must never think that we have achieved the level of perfection to where that we have gone that distance. So the castigation, if you will, that he did for the leper was his mercy 100%. Right? He loved the leper enough to
tell him when he was messed up and not supposed to be where he was.
Right.
If he wouldn't have left him, he'd just let him do what everyone did, just heal him.
Hey, get out of here. Right. He could be like that, and the leper has no compassion, no nothing. But so there is compassion in the rebuke, and we draw this from an opposite analogy. You can say something positive about something, but you can say it by saying it in reverse. Hey, don't do that anymore. We get all sad because we've been castigated. It happens to all of us that way. We feel down because we've fallen into that trap, as it were. But the hand of rescue pulls us out so we don't have to walk down that path. Any other comments, questions, etc.? It's quiet in here.